Greetings, Iowa. My name is Brian Rohrbaugh. About 10 years ago, my son and I first started watching Bob Benyart live on television. At first I thought, what's wrong with this guy? He would quote from the Bible and I'd think, that's not in the Bible. So I got my Bible and I looked. You know what? I was wrong. I didn't know things like God sought to kill Moses. Did you? I soon realized Bob had an understanding of the Bible that I wanted, along with the boldness to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ without compromise. So I purchased a plot and a video, and I began to support this ministry. The first time I met Bob in person was in 1999, a few days after my son Dan was murdered at Columbine High School. I am so thankful that I had a biblically correct understanding of God and His Word at that time. I hope you will enjoy this show and join with me in supporting Bob Benyart Live. I want to encourage you to buy the plot and read it. And if you don't love it, I'll personally refund your money. Thank you.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number is 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We're a conservative news talk call-in show. So whatever's on your mind, we also talk about the Bible, the world's number one bestseller. And at Denver Bible Church this weekend, we had a great time. Did you have a good time at your church? Do you go to a good church? Do you know a good church? Well, if you can't find a good church, look around. Look for one at least where people bring their Bibles to church. That's a good sign. And we have a quiz on the internet, a pastor qualification quiz, and it's pretty tough. But if you're gutsy, you could find out if the pastor is qualified to lead a congregation, and check out the pastor qualification quiz that we offer. Where's that at? KGov? KGOV.com. Okay, so some of the news. The Republicans are in the White House, right? This is George W. Bush's second term. And that means, what have we been saying on the air for 15 years? That the Republicans vastly outspend the Democrats. Vastly. There is no comparison in the federal government. And so now what's happened, but Congress has increased the debt limit yet again to $9 trillion. $9 trillion, George W. Bush, social spending absolutely out of control, new entitlement programs, tens of billions of dollars in additional creative spending by the federal government. And how much of it do we owe? How much do we owe? Because when the government borrows, then we have to pay it back. And so here's the debt for our family. If Cheryl and I consider the debt of our family, just what do we owe? Our share of the federal debt. All right? My wife and I, we have seven boys and two daughter-in-laws and two grandkids. So that's seven, eight, nine for the women. 10, 11 for the kids, and Cheryl and I, 13. We owe $390,000. That's our share. Our family share of the federal debt is $390,000. This is not any small, insignificant matter. This is out of control. This is a federal government with the liberal president who believes in, you know, the Democrats are tax and spend and the Republicans are borrow and spend. And the reason the Republicans spend more than the Democrats since World War II is because the Republicans pretend that they're against big government and out of control government and social spending. They pretend that they're against it. So when you have a Democratic president, then the Republicans fight against the Democrats spending increasing spending. But when you have a Republican president, then anything they want to spend, they get carte blanche. And the Democrats, they're all for increasing social spending, and the Republican president wants to increase it, so they increase it out of control. Out of control, $30,000 every man, woman, and child in the United States owes. $30,000. So whatever you thought your family debt was, multiply the number of people in your family by 30,000. You have four people in your family, so take your debt, whatever it is, and add $120,000 to it, because that's how the government is going to have to increasingly, there's pressure there to increase tax revenues to eventually to service this debt and pay this debt. And that's $9 trillion without interest, right? Isn't that $9 trillion without interest? Okay, so that's one of the stories in the news. Then we have the parents who have been arrested. Well, let's see. This couple in Norwalk, Ohio, has been charged with abuse for forcing some of their 11 adopted children to sleep in cages, and they lost custody. They lost custody of their kids, and that was today. And also, there is a history of sexual abuse allegations against the father. Now, the mother and father, the mother, Sharon Gravel, she testified that she met her husband 20 years ago at a potluck dinner for a child sex abuse support group. Now, that's some place to meet your future husband and father of your children, huh? At a child sex abuse support group. So, what a tragedy. They've adopted 11 kids. Now, if homosexuals want to adopt children, they go right to the top of the list. Top of the list. Because social services around the country is inherently, instinctively, they do what's most destructive for the children. That's what social services typically does. And so if a homosexual wants to adopt a child, they go right to the top of the list. And if a white family, if they're a black children, black babies who need a home and a white family wants to adopt, then the racist liberals will swoop in and say, no, you can't adopt a black child because you're white. And we say, boy, you're racist. And they say, no, that's not right. Well, a black family, would that be great, but there's none on the list here to adopt, and this child needs, well, put them in a foster home. So our government has set up this deal where people actually, people who love kids and well-meaning people want to help kids, and they get into this foster care program, which is a bureaucratic nightmare. And so you have people figuring out, well, we get so many $100 a month for each kid. So we were watching one or two kids, but, you know, every additional kid, we get another few $100. And so whatever the amount is, state to state, county to county. And so pretty soon they get 6, 8, 10, 11, 12 kids. And then they find out, well, they could adopt the kids and get their Social Security checks. And that money goes completely to the parents. So 11 kids, if they're getting, you know, if they're getting $450 a kid, I have no idea what they're getting. But that, what, $5,000 a month maybe for the kids. And so, in other words, the government, because the government pays people to watch kids, you end up getting people in the system who are as interested in the money as they are in the kids, if not more. So this family, this couple, they adopted 11 kids, and they had the kids sleeping in cages. And they explained that, they said, you don't understand. These children, ages 1 to 15, the cages were necessary to protect them because they have behavioral problems. Yeah, I guess if you were adopted by parents who met at a child sex abuse support group, you'd probably have behavioral problems, I would think. So sexual abuse of children, the We have people in this country who commit rape and get off lightly, and it's all tragic. We have no longer a conception of capital crimes and of trying to stop the crime epidemic in America, trying to end it. We just become tolerant of the crime epidemic. It's absolutely tragic. So 1-800-8-NYART, that's 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. If somebody rapes a child, they should be put to death. That's the penalty. It's not Jessica's Law. It's not spend more time in jail. If you rape a child, you should be put to death. Okay, what else do we have? Now, this is in South Carolina. In South Carolina, there is a fugitive and a convicted sex offender, Kenneth Hinson. And, well, he was a fugitive. He was just arrested, and that's pretty neat. That's always good, right? He is suspected of kidnapping and sexually assaulting two teenage girls, and he was hiding out in the woods, basically. And he got thirsty last week. And so he showed up at a relative's house seeking a drink of water, and the police caught up with him because of his relative, who was a hero in this case. Now, his name is Kenneth Hinson, and the story is that he kidnapped two 17-year-old girls and brought them to his property, and he had built a room beneath a shed at his home. This is in Hartsville, South Carolina, about 70 miles northeast of Columbia. And he sexually assaulted them there in this room beneath the shed that he had built. And he went to a relative. He came out from a wooded area that was only about a mile from where he lived. And he went to another home where his relatives live. And he asked for a drink. And the woman, relative, whoever she was, she called 911 and got the police there, and they arrested him. Now, that's pretty good. When somebody turns in a relative, that's pretty good. That's pretty neat. Because if you have a relative who has kidnapped and raped, sexually assaulted young girls, it doesn't matter that it's a relative, right? Whoever it is, you want them reported. You want justice to be done. And so this guy is another example of what we've been calling for on Bob and Yurt Live. We've been talking about it more often recently, but for years, that we should have a national DNA database. We should work toward a national DNA database. To start with, every criminal who is arrested, there should be a DNA sample taken, and that go toward a national database. Every immigrant who comes into the country, a DNA sample should be taken. Every child who's born, a DNA sample should be taken. And gradually, we should work toward, you know, it costs a fortune, but we should work toward a complete national DNA database, so that when a crime is committed, so that millions, hundreds of millions of men, hopefully first in America and then in Europe and around the world, they will learn that if they commit a sexual assault, their name will be tattooed to the victim. Now, I mean that as a figure of speech. If they commit a sexual assault, DNA trace evidence left on the victim or at the scene of the crime will identify them by name. That's a deterrent. That possibly, we can't tell, because of the complexity of human behavior, we can't tell the degree of deterrent it will be, but it could be an extraordinary deterrent. And crime is often a progressive lifestyle where people start committing minor crimes and they gradually work themselves up to kidnap, rape, and murder. And that often comes after years of being a criminal, thinking you're going to get away with crimes. And when there is a DNA database, then somebody comes into a gas station and holds it up and they might leave trace evidence at the gas station. The phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And there are conservatives who are paranoid conservatives, and they think that they don't want anyone to know that they exist. They don't want anyone to know what their name is or where they live. And if they were around when America was declaring our independence from Britain, they would have never signed their name to the Declaration of Independence because they're paranoid. They don't want anybody to know who they are. Now, that's weird, of course. But there is no right to anonymity. There's no right to be anonymous. And a government has a right to know who is living within its borders. That's fine. And then here's somebody, and who is this person? It's okay to know who's in your town. Who is this person in your store? Who's this person on the street? It's okay to know those things. It's not a crime. It's not a crime for the government to want to know who lives here in our country. And with the technology that we have, not only fingerprints, but now DNA trace evidence could give you a name and an address. Well, an address, if it's up to date. And what a deterrent that would be. And think of the advance we could make in law enforcement with a deterrent to millions of criminals or potential criminals who realize, wow, if I commit a crime, if I commit a physical crime like assault or sexual assault or rape or kidnapping or murder even, if I leave a hair, if a flake off of my skin, if I get cut, they're going to have my name. They're going to know where my family lives. They're going to know where I work. See, a lot of murderers are bad problem solvers. That's why they become murderers, and they're evil. And so making it more difficult for somebody to commit a crime is a very good thing. So conservatives need to get on at the front of this curve and advocate for a national DNA database and try to trick the feminists into supporting it, because they're liberals, and so they're more pro-crime than they are concerned about right and wrong or morality, because they're liberals. But maybe we could get the feminists to support this, like intimidate them into supporting it or mock them into supporting it, because this could save how many women a year from being the victims of sexual assault. So, okay, our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Then we've gotten a couple emails from some conservative Christians who are upset with me. Now, why is that? How could they be upset with me? I don't even understand it. But they're upset with me because of a show on which I just mentioned briefly and thought, now that it's a done deal, we could talk about the Dubai World Ports deal without emotion. And the argument I made, and I'll repeat the argument, because the criticisms I've heard about this haven't really addressed my argument. They just ignored my argument and repeated the typical complaint that Dubai and an Arab company should not control any of our ports because of the World on Terror and because of Islamic terrorism and all that. And I made the argument that America is less safe. We're less safe because the Dubai port deal failed. It fell through. And it was a populist idea that this was bad for our security. And so democracy, one of the problems with democracy is that you get a majority of people who are going off of buzzwords or sound bites or slogans, and they think that translates to wisdom. And so they say, well, don't you know that Dubai and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, they raise money for terrorist groups. Yeah, I know that. And so did America and England and many of the countries in the world. It's not that their government raised money for terrorism. It's just like terrorism was raised here, so too there. And if you ask this person, okay, so you think Dubai shouldn't control these ports because why? Dubai shouldn't control these ports because in their country, money was raised for terrorism. And you say, well, what if more money was raised here in America for terrorism than in the UAE? Would that change your opinion? No. Okay, then don't use that as an argument. Then let's get to your real point, your real argument. Because in the past, when there were monarchies instead of so many democracies, in order to increase the security between nations, the king of one nation would have his daughter, the princess, marry a prince of an opposing nation. And even if they were not always the greatest of friends, that was a way of helping them increase the likelihood that they're not going to go to war against each other, because now your son and my daughter are married, and even though we don't like each other too much, we should try to be nice to one another. And so the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, but today they own half of Honolulu. So they're not likely to bomb Hawaii today because it would cost them too much. And like I said, I pointed out that I don't check up on these things, but the Japanese were buying Rockefeller Center Plaza in New York City, the office building above the ice skating rink, for what, $1 billion? And so the Japanese are not likely to bomb New York City if they own Rockefeller Plaza, Rockefeller Center. And so commerce is a great way of increasing security. And when an Arab country, Dubai World Ports, when they're going to spend $6 billion to operate some of our ports, that's a really, really good thing. That's $6 billion worth of security that an Arab country is investing in America. Let's go to the phones. In Colorado, Jason, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Good day.
Howdy, Jason.
I have a slight disagreement with you with regards to the rights of the government. The government has no rights. It has duties, obligations, and limitations. Now, maybe it might fall under the purview of a duty and obligation, possibly, but in the Declaration of Independence, it says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
Yeah.
And that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed.
Okay, Jason, right there.
I wouldn't consent to that, so Jason. They don't have that authority.
All right, Jason, hold on. Thomas Jefferson, who was a deist, at that point...
That's an arguable point.
No, that's not arguable. Thomas Jefferson...
In what deity, though?
Thomas Jefferson created his own Bible, right? The Jefferson Bible.
Okay.
You know about that, where he cut up a New Testament and he rejected everything about the person of Jesus Christ, and he just kept what he liked from the New Testament, and that became the Jefferson Bible.
So then what deity was he serving?
His God was like Spinoza's God. It was sort of like nature.
Okay.
It wasn't much of a personal God. And so anyway, he was wrong there. That's a humanist notion. Authority does not flow uphill. It flows downhill. I don't know if you want to think about that for a moment, but parents do not derive their authority over their children from their children.
Oh, no, that comes from God.
Right. In fact, all authority flows from God. All authority flows downhill from God through governing officials to the people, through parents to their children.
Well, they grant us our rights and our liberties, and not the people have the inherent inalienable rights and liberties. And so if the government gives us our rights and our freedoms,
the government
then they have
doesn't.
The freedom to take them away.
Yeah, you're right. The government does not grant us our right to life, liberty, or property. Those rights come from our Creator. And so you and I agree on that.
Okay.
And therefore, the government would be unjust to take away our rights to life, liberty, or property. And
well,
to
that
due
would be
process.
My personal property, DNA. That's on my body. Okay. That is personal property.
Jason.
That is personal property. Nobody else owns it but me, and it was granted to me from God.
And how about your photograph?
That's also my personal property.
Okay, so you think that you have a right to anonymity.
No, I didn't say that. I said that's personal property.
Well, yeah, so you're saying you have the right not to let the government know your identity, your picture, your fingerprints, or who you are. That's all your personal property.
It's all personal property.
Okay, now I would say that argument is immature.
How would you figure?
How do I figure? Because in the Bible, God lays out a general structure for government and the responsibilities of government.
To punish evildoers and to protect the innocent.
That's part of it.
That's the general purpose. That was what Paul was getting at in Romans.
The government has two just functions. Criminal justice, to protect us from those who would commit crimes, including foreign armies and criminals here. And what's the second just function of the government?
To reward those who are... They're not reward, but
No, the one is criminal justice, including against invading armies and all. Mm-hmm. And the second is infrastructure, like roads, bridges, waterways, and so on. The government has the right to...
They don't have rights.
Jason, if you're a governing official...
They have duties, obligations, and limitations.
Jason, you said that now this second time. It doesn't mean it's right. The government has the right to tax its people. The government has the right to tax its people. In fact, the government has the obligation, you're right, to conduct a criminal justice system, and it can't do that on zero money. The government has the right to tax you. And if you don't pay your taxes, they have the right to punish you. And they cannot tax you if they don't know that you exist. So the government has the right to know your identity and that you exist within their domain, within their jurisdiction. So here's what I do, Jason, that's a little different than what you do. I take my principles of government and the ultimate principles of government, not from the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, but from the Word of God. And then start there. But hey, we're out of time. Call back in, all right?
Sure thing.
Great call. I appreciate it. We'll be back after this.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. NYARD, 1-800-836-9278. This is Bob Inyart here. You're listening to Bob Inyart Live. And we're also on the internet at KGov, KGOV.com. So if you're interested in past shows, we've had some classics. You know Juanita Broderick? She is the campaign supporter that Bill Clinton raped some years ago. We've interviewed Juanita. And then also the nurse, Norma Rogers, who found Juanita sobbing in the very place where she was raped by Bill Clinton. And Norma Rogers, being a nurse, attended immediately to her friend, whose face was all, well, her lip was bitten and swollen twice its size, and she was a wreck. And so those interviews are just extraordinary, and you could get to them at KGOV.com, and at shadowgov.com, you'll find our material on government principles. And the principles of just government, now this might shock many Christians, but the principles of just government did not come into existence in the 1700s. In 1776, that was not the birth of right and wrong. So when you're trying to understand the just function of government, what is right for a government to do, what is wrong for a government to do, that didn't change in the 18th century. It didn't change at that time. So we need to think outside of the box and think really what is right and what is wrong, generally and then specifically for governments. All right, let's go to the phone in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Eric, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob, how you doing today?
Doing well, sir.
Good. On the topics that you have going on today, I'd have a couple of concerns. One is that I agree with your point that any country that is operating as a ally of the United States, of our country, should be rewarded.
So this is about the Dubai World Ports deal.
Right.
And that now, because of popular opinion, Dubai is not spending $6 billion to operate some of our ports. They're going to keep that money and do something else with it.
Right. And so I do agree with that point, that in some way, shape, or form, that they should be rewarded. Any ally of ours, we should keep on good relations with, we should do business with, and we should reward them to help make our country safer. However, I'd be a little bit concerned that even if the UAE is indeed an ally of ours, mm-hmm. and that they do care about our well-being as a country,
right?
I'd be concerned that of having Muslim workers. We're in a war against radical Islam,
right?
And UAE, I assume is probably a Sunni Muslim.
Well, it's
nation as well.
Dubai,
and especially of concern to me.
Dubai is a secular Muslim society, sort of the way Turkey and Istanbul is, only Dubai even more so. They have prostitution, homosexuality, pornography, and the government. Of course, there are Muslims there that don't like it. But Dubai is a very immoral Muslim society.
So they'd fit right in with the United States, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, they sure would. And Europe. And so, and an Arab government, we have airports all over this country with foreign countries' airlines flying into our international airports. And so if Thai Airlines or LL Airlines flies into LaGuardia, there are a couple gates that they run. They run these gates, and these are LL gates. And that's fine. That's the way nations do business. And so for foreign companies to operate gates at our airports or ports in our harbor, that's fine. That's a way of doing business. Now, if there's a government that was funding terrorism or a government that was advocating terrorism against us, then of course you would treat that government and their firms differently than a government that's an ally of ours.
Right, and I, the concern I have is really that it's not only the government, but it's also the people.
Yeah,
and the religion that you're dealing with. And
that's true.
That would just be a little bit of a concern,
right?
For security's sake, and I'd want that addressed.
And so, let's say it's a bomb, right? Let's say it's a nuclear bomb, which is the greatest concern, a nuclear weapon put on a ship and sent here and exploded in the harbor, say in Elizabeth, New Jersey, outside of New York City. That's a huge concern. And, of course, that could happen no matter who's running the port. And we might say, well, it's more likely to happen if there are Muslims on the other end who hate us, and that could be. But it's also, you know, we're talking about possibilities, and it's also more likely that an Arab country that has $6 billion invested in our ports operating safely, that they're more likely to uncover a plot to attack us through one of our ports than we would be or the Brits would be.
Yeah.
And so the people running the company and the people running the government would be intensely, heavily invested in our security. And that's a really good thing. So that part of it, that whole part of the rational calculation was left out of the public discussion of Dubai running some of our ports.
Yeah. Now, I got a couple other issues I want to hit on real quick.
Yeah, good.
One is that you're speaking about privacy and how, you know, our Constitution, people try to make it to guarantee privacy, and how you're against that issue.
Well, anonymity.
Right.
That we don't have a right to be anonymous.
Okay, and here's the... I agree with that to the extent that we have to be able to punish evildoers and, you know, promote justice and morality in the country. I agree with it from that point of view. The only concern I would have is how far we take it, because, for example, you know, the early church, like, for example, in the book of Acts,
right.
They hid out from, you know, essentially the Jewish sector of the government. Because, you know, they're trying to be rooted out and put to death. So,
well, Christians have been persecuted, of course, and killed, as other groups have been. But sometimes governing officials and governments were the ones that killed the innocent. But that should not inform our public policy decisions on government.
Yeah, you're right.
Because here's why. Because governments have killed the innocent, and they use guns to do it. So therefore, no government should be allowed to arm its military, because governments have slaughtered the innocent with guns. In other words, it doesn't follow. You can't say that because some police officers have been corrupt, therefore cops shouldn't be armed or shouldn't have the authority to arrest people.
I think you're right, considering a just and godly government.
No, any government.
Well, here's a couple of points. Should Muslim governments know where every dissenter lives, and should the Taliban know where every non-Muslim infidel lives?
Should Germany
where all the Jews live? Yeah.
What?
Should Germany know where all the Jews
live? You're trying to solve a problem of a government murdering its people by saying the people have the right to hide.
No, what I'm saying is that...
Eric, hold on. Think through with me for a moment. That's what you're saying. You're saying, okay, there's a problem in the history of the world where governments occasionally slaughter the innocent.
Okay.
And so one of the ways to solve that problem is you have the right to hide. That's not the solution to that problem.
No, the solution to the ultimate solution is having a godly government.
You don't plan on that, because it's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen until the Lord returns. We're not going to have a godly government. You read through the whole sacred history of the Bible, and almost always the government was evil, even when it was the monarchy that was anointed, beginning with Samuel, by God. For 1,000 years, it was evil. So we're going to have evil governments till the Lord comes, almost certainly. Once in a while, by accident, you'll have a righteous government, by accident. Very brief, but it might happen. And so you're never going to have a righteous government. But that doesn't mean that there are not governmental principles that we should advocate and try to put in place. Like, the government should not kill the innocent. So we advocate for that. But one of the weapons at your defense is not, we therefore have the right to be anonymous, so when the government comes to kill us, they can't find us. That's a de facto defense. If the government is coming to kill people unjustly, then those people have the right to hide. They even have the right to defend themselves. Right? If the government is coming to arrest you because you're Jewish and kill you and your children, you have the right to kill those Germans when they get on your doorstep. You have that right.
You do. And, you know, my point is that it's not that you're wrong in what you're saying, but is that how far do we take it? Because, you know, putting, they're talking about the, putting the radio frequency chips into the license plates so they can track you via satellite. You know, all those crazy things that they're, imagining of doing in the Congress. You know, and it just seems to me that it's how far do you go with it? Because eventually, you have a right to hide, but you can't hide.
The funniest thing, Eric, is that, liberals have been scared to death of Big Brother and Animal Farm, George Orwell, 1984, all that. And now the ones who've created Big Brother, according to Al Sharon, who's an expert on this, the ones who created Big Brother is Google. Google. It's unbelievable. Somebody emails us a question or something, and we Google them. We find out everything about their lives. We find out just everything about them. And it's just bizarre. Posts they make on forums, the kind of car parts they ordered for their Volkswagen. It's just bizarre. But anyway, of course, there's a concern of the government misusing information. But there's also a concern with the government misusing guns, bombs, camps, right? The government can't have a camp because it might start rounding up people and locking them away because they have a camp. Well, that's not a valid argument. And so the government might round up everyone who's an organ player, like the Soviet Union. If you read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag, he said they first arrested all the pastors. Tens of thousands of people were arrested by the communists. And they put the pastors in hard labor 10 years. Then they needed more labor. Then they went through and they arrested all the choir directors throughout the Soviet Union. Everyone who had been a choir director or an organ player at a church or piano player. Then they needed more people. Then they started arresting everyone who had been in a choir. Everybody. And literally, they arrested millions of people and put them in forced labor because they had sang in choirs in churches. Now, that doesn't mean that a choir member has a right to anonymity. That's not the solution to that problem. The solution to that problem is to expose wickedness in government and advocate a government that knows right from wrong.
Essentially, a right government or a somewhat righteous government is the solution.
Yeah, but don't expect it. Right. Don't expect that the government will be righteous, but advocate for it and push for it. But so we know that we're going to have an evil government, but that doesn't mean we have a right to shoot judges on sight. We say, but it's an evil government. It doesn't matter. Whether the government is righteous or wicked doesn't change the principles that we should advocate.
Lastly, I'd just like to say that you mentioned on a show about a week ago, I was talking to you on the air about it a little bit, and you said that the four commandments that should be essentially included in a governmental policy for criminal law would be do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, and do not perjure.
Right.
Okay. My concern there is that I believe that the Mosaic Law was given to the children of Israel, but the Ten Commandments in their entirety
applied it.
Are written in the hearts of men.
Well,
those ten will not pass away until God's law is fulfilled in all of mankind.
All right. Now, okay, you just made a claim, and so I'd like to address it directly.
Okay.
You said that the Ten Commandments are written in men's hearts.
And before we go too far with that, I just wanted to say the reason I'm saying that is because there is no, you're talking about morality. Now, a lot of, the criminal laws have been kind of watered down in our country to where they're almost in no effect anymore in a lot of instances.
Right.
And my concern is if you do not have God as part of your law, then you have no basis for any law.
I think that's, Eric, it's a brilliant point. I completely agree. And the Constitution that we recommend, which is at our website, shadowgov.com, you could get the, if you forget that name, you could get there from KGov, KGOV.com. It directly attributes the authority of government to God. And God is the foundation for the government and for criminal justice. Mm-hmm. And God, okay, so let's talk about whether or not the Ten Commandments should be enforced by governments.
Yeah, okay.
First off, some of the Ten Commandments deal with criminal behavior, and other of the ten deal with sins that are not criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
right? Do you agree with that?
My point is they're foundational to the criminal law.
Well,
because you can't call something moral if you don't have God.
I agree with that, but you could have God as a foundation without having the Ten Commandments being enforced by your government.
Well, let me give you some examples real quick. One is, let's say, as far as the do not covet law, okay? You know, an obvious example would be somebody says, you know, I'm going to get your land no matter what it takes.
Yeah,
you know,
if somebody
that's coveting, you can obviously arrest somebody for that.
If somebody threatens someone else to steal their property or to hurt their children or something,
yeah,
that's a crime. If someone is envious, that's not a crime. That's a sin, and the government cannot enforce any regulation against envy. The government can't do that.
There's an extent to what you can prove or what you can show or what.
No, even if the government could prove that someone was envious, it is beyond the scope of proper government as revealed by God for the government to try to prosecute somebody for being envious. That's
overt,
inappropriate.
I'm speaking of overt covetousness is what I'm speaking.
It doesn't matter. If it becomes a threat or a conspiracy to steal, then it's a crime. But it doesn't matter how envious you are. No government has the authority or should have the authority to prosecute you for being envious,
yeah,
or lazy.
I'm not speaking of envy. I'm speaking of
coveting. Coveting your neighbor's goods is envy.
It springs from envy as a sin, but I think overt, you know, when it becomes an action, then it becomes, you know,
then it's not covetousness. Then it's stealing.
I don't want to spend so much time on the one, but
okay, the Ten Commandments say, thou shalt not steal. So that's against the law. If you covet, that's a sin. But stealing is a crime. There's a difference.
Okay, well, I'm trying to discern between the difference, but let's go. We'll go to the next one. Honor your father and mother.
I'll give you an example. If you're lazy, that could be a sin, but it's not a crime to be lazy. If you owe someone money and you don't pay, a violation of a contract, then that could be criminal. So laziness is not a crime, but it could be a sin. Taking a day off and relaxing, that's not necessarily sin. That could be very healthy. But anyway, okay, now, do not work on the Sabbath day.
Right.
That is not written in man's heart. That is a symbolic ordinance for 1,500 years before Christ, Israel operated by the Sabbath law. But before that, for 2,500 years, from Adam until Moses, there is no record that God said to mankind, you can't work on Saturday, you can't work on the Sabbath. God had never given that command. In fact, if you look in the Bible says that that command went back to Moses.
Actually, that command goes, you know, that, you know, the Sabbath goes back to Genesis.
No.
When God rested on the seventh day.
Yeah, God rested, but God did not command men that they could not work on the Sabbath until the Passover.
God rested, and then God made holy the Sabbath day.
That's absolutely right. And 2,500 years later, God, through Moses, instituted the Sabbath law, and God said, on this day, you're not allowed to work every week. And God instituted a punishment, and then when one of the Jews violated the Sabbath, Moses went to God and said, what do we do? This was a new thing to them. They had never had the Sabbath law. And what is it? In the book of Nehemiah, I think, where God comes out through Nehemiah and states that the Sabbath is from Moses. And so it's not written on a man's heart. If a man is cutting the grass on a Saturday, let's say he's got a lawn, he lives in Indonesia, he's never heard of the Mosaic Law. He's never even heard of it. And he's cutting the grass. He's not going to have a guilty conscience because he's tidying up his lawn on Saturday. He's not. In fact, in Exodus, God says explicitly that the Sabbath is a symbol of my covenant with Israel.
Yeah, but I think what God is really trying to say regarding the Sabbath is that there should be time. When you're making a law, you have to lay it down in concrete and in stone. But the point of the Sabbath is that God intends man, every man that's ever been created, every woman, every child, to give time to our holy God.
No.
And that's the principle.
Eric,
however,
Eric,
it's not the concrete
if that
law.
Was the principle, God would not have said, if you pick up a stick on the Sabbath, you're to be put to death.
Yeah, but listen, a lot of that is symbolic law.
Well, that's the whole point. Symbols are not written on your heart. What God wrote on our heart is the moral code. God wrote the moral code on our heart, and if you violate the moral code, you're sinning. And if it's a certain threshold of a violation of certain moral codes, then you're committing a crime, and that's when the government should get involved. And the government should not be enforcing the Sabbath law. It shouldn't be enforcing men to honor their parents. Now, if they commit a crime against their parents, the government should be involved.
Let me speak to that one.
Yeah.
Don't we both know what happens with children when in a society when kids do not honor their mother's father?
It's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous.
So why should it not be a law then?
Why? Because it was a symbolic ordinance for Israel. Because Israel didn't have a choice. God chose them, the chosen people, the chosen nation, through whom he would bring the Messiah to the world and give us the gospel. And by being chosen in that role, God used Israel to teach many truths through symbolic ordinances. And Israel had no choice. They were not allowed legally to worship any other god. If they did, they'd be put to death. Now, God did not say that all the world had to be circumcised, all the world had to keep the Sabbath, all the world had to keep the dietary law, and that every other religion in the world should be outlawed. God didn't say that.
Well, we're speaking of the Ten Commandments, though, here, though.
Well, that's right, but God, the Ten Commandments have the Sabbath, and Jesus Christ said that circumcision takes precedent over the Sabbath. He said in the Gospels, because circumcision came before the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And so God gave symbolic ordinances for Israel to teach us, for example, it's either God's way or hell. There's no alternative. Either you do it God's way or the end is death.
Yeah, well, Jesus said that circumcision is over the Sabbath for the children of Israel. But the circumcision was not one of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
My point is the Ten Commandments given on Sinai are the foundation for the moral.
Okay, so if the government
cannot have it unless it's integral.
So Eric, if the government is going to uphold the Sabbath, they're going to enforce the Sabbath, and then a Jew circumcises and violates the Sabbath, are you going to give a special exception for Jews who violate the Sabbath? It's too much of a question with the music playing. We ran out of time, Eric.
All right.
They were great questions, a great conversation.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, Bob.
Thank you so much. Boy, do I appreciate that. Taking the Word of God seriously and trying to solve the problems of our day. Check us out at kgov.com.